So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
I was raised to believe that cheaters never prosper. But in America, it seems like cheaters always prosper.
The use of performance-enhancing drugs like steroids is dangerous, and it sends the wrong message that there are shortcuts to accomplishment and that performance is more important than character.
There is a clash in America between doing the right thing and being the best.
Americans play to win all the time because the very thought of losing is hateful to America.
It is out of here! 756! Five stands alone!
In a culture where second place is the first loser, the real heroes are the ones who win at all costs.
Everything I have, my career, my success, my family, I owe to America.
This is America. We are the greatest country in the world. You could call us a nation on steroids. But what are those long-term side effects? For me and my brothers, steroids are not the problem. They are just another side effect of being American.
Welcome to Review Away. It is John Pollock and Wei Ting with you. How are you, Wei?
Awesome.
That's great.
I'm amazing.
You were telling me earlier today, Wei, that you have had quite the backlash towards coffee.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Do tell.
Well, I haven't had a coffee. I'm not a regular coffee drinker, and I really only drink it for the podcast when I need to boost my energy. When I'm just really tired. And so I haven't really had a need to do it because I haven't been working for the past 3 weeks. I've been on vacation. And I had my first coffee yesterday. And I just
since before the break.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I drank so much coffee during the break because I'd be home and I'd make coffee in the morning and it would last me till like 4 p.m.
Why would you make that much?
You know why? Because this actually probably does link to what we're going to review today of just wanting more.
Why?
Wanting more. Just because. Like, look at this. I've got a coffee right here, and my throat's bothering me. I've got a ginger ale for once I finish my coffee. I feel you've become way more healthier than me over the past 6 months.
Yeah, I just don't know why you would need so much coffee.
I mean, like coffee.
Okay.
Once I'm done, I want more.
Right, you just like
What's
it.
Wrong with that? What is wrong with my mentality, Wei?
No, nothing. I mean, I think it might be a small addiction. I know that
could be.
You know, if you drink soda for a long time, you're just going to want more soda. So, I imagine it to be like that.
See, I years ago listened to a podcast that forever scarred me towards soda. And I dropped it completely. I used to have like a, you know, Diet Coke a couple times a week. Mm-hmm. And then when I heard this podcast, just how horrendous it is, I just stopped completely cold turkey. And then it was like a year and a half later, I got really sick. And I think it was because when I was young and I would get sick, I would have ginger ale. And so I relented and I had ginger ale. And since that time, ginger ale is the only pop I will drink. Not that it's necessarily a healthy choice of pop, but I have not drank any other Coke or anything.
It works for you, right? Ginger ale as
a
remedy?
To the point when we did that, remember when we went out on Queen Street and we did that that politics or that shoot on CM Punk and I had to chug that Pepsi?
Mm-hmm.
It tasted so gross to me because it had been like a year and a half since I had a Pepsi.
Right.
The taste was in my mouth for like a full 24 hours. I could like taste it. Mm. And it was disgusting. It was like some acid I had just put into my mouth. That's how horrible it tasted for me drinking that soda that day.
Okay. Yeah, and I love how it's because of CM Punk that you had to do that.
CM Punk pushed me off the bandwagon.
Yeah, that's right. Well, anyway, yeah, I had my first coffee in weeks yesterday, last Friday, and I just it just gave me like a lot of anxiety.
Anxiety?
Yeah, like I just felt like shit. Like, well, first of all, like
this was on Friday.
Yeah, like I was.
Because you came out with us on Friday.
Yeah, I was pretty much over by then. Oh, okay. But like throughout the early morning, I was just like, man, I gotta get up. I gotta do something. I gotta, you know, I need to. I don't know. It's just ridiculous, and I don't
sounds
know.
Like a drug.
It is a drug.
You're having a psychosis or something.
Well, caffeine is a drug. It's probably the most commonly used drug in the world.
But it's the one that is the most easily. Most easy to profit from and most plentiful to people. I think that's one of the keys is you make coffee. It's just part of our culture, our everyday life.
Yep. We all
and people are hooked on it.
Well, we all need and rely on coffee to get us through our day, or many of us do. Is that cheating? Is that cheating that when we're using, relying on this substance to, you know, improve our lives?
I don't know if it necessarily improves your life.
Yeah, it does.
I think that's more of a placebo.
It's improved your life. Can you function without coffee?
I think if I had to, I would.
Okay.
Would you
get as much done?
I don't know. I think if I were to stop coffee, I think the effects, like you stopped drinking coffee for 2 weeks, you had no ill effects.
I'm not a regular coffee drinker anyway, but I don't know. I don't know if this podcast is any better. As a result of me not drinking coffee, maybe this podcast would be way more amazing if I was drinking it.
Well, in that case, you should be on performance enhancers.
There you go.
There is no competition, though, between us, nor is there...
Sure there is. We're on the iTunes top 50.
Here. Drug Sports. Testing podcasters.
Yeah.
I think there would be a heavy failure rate. Amongst the comedy section, they would all fail.
Oh, of course. No doubt.
Well, wait, what are we going to talk about today?
We're talking about drugs.
We're going to talk about drugs and the 2008 documentary, Bigger, Stronger, Faster, that way you and I went to watch with Mauro Ranallo and maybe some other guys at the Fight Network. We watched it at the 2008 Hot Dogs Festival in Toronto.
I think I just saw this with you. I don't remember Mauro going with Mauro.
I thought Mauro went with us. Maybe he didn't.
I think he went to watch it afterwards.
Okay, yeah. Well...
Well, you and I, yeah, there's a thing in Toronto every year called the Toronto Film Hot Dogs.
Hot Dogs.
Hot Dogs, where it's a documentary festival, and I don't know how this even came about. We didn't even really know what was...
I had heard nothing about this film.
Yeah.
And just simply had gotten an invite to go see it, and right up until the point that the opening scene, where it was like January 23rd, 1984... me knowing my dates was like, oh, I know what date that is. And then when the sheet came on, I was like, oh, fuck, there's wrestling in this movie?
John and I had no idea that this movie would be revolved around wrestling.
Not a clue. And just, then doing more like, and to the point that I went up to the director afterwards, I was like, that's when I was producing Fight Network Radio. So I was like constantly, it was just trying to book guests on a daily basis. So I went up, I was like, hey, you're in Toronto tomorrow. Can you come into our studio? But this documentary left quite the impression on me.
I thought it'd be like a serious, you know, A&E type of, I don't know, 60 Minutes type of serious look at steroids. That's all I knew about it.
It was a serious look at steroids.
This is about steroids. No, there was a ton of comedy in this. This was like, it was entertainment, you know?
What I think a worthwhile documentary should do.
Okay, but I was saying I was expecting like a PBS type of, you know, straight.
This is the chromosome that is affected by the base synthetic of steroids.
Yes. And, okay, well, let's talk about it. This movie was made 2008?
2008 is when it was released. It first came out.
Yes. And the director's name is Chris Bell.
Who is a former member of the WWE creative staff.
Is that right?
He was there in 2006 for a very, very brief period. And later on in today's show, we're going to hear from Chris Bell. But this is an interview from... mid-2008 when he was on The Law. So it's going to be an interview from 4 years ago, but discussing the documentary, so I can't really say it's dated.
Yeah. Well, it kind of is. There's sort
of... He talks a bit about being on the creative team during this time. And,
okay.
seeing Hulk Hogan's son Nick come in with a skateboard at SummerSlam.
Interesting. I really didn't know that he was a part of the creative team.
Very brief time. He's very tight with John Cena. As we even saw in the documentary, there was a signed action figure or something from John Cena, and right. he was apparently very close with the Bell family. And I imagine the connection was either, I'm guessing here, but the family grew up in Poughkeepsie, New York. John was from like nearby in like Massachusetts. They either met there or his younger brother, Mark Smelly, was in UPW at the same time John Cena was working as Prototype. Because that's when I first, when I watched this documentary, I knew who Mark Bell was the most because I used to watch UPW tapes when Mark Bell was wrestling down there for Rick Bassman's group.
Oh, wow.
When they were a developmental group for the WWE.
Okay. So this movie, for those who haven't seen it, and I urge everybody to go and watch it. It's just, even if you're not big into all the steroid talk, I don't know, I think it's just a very well-made film. But it revolves around Chris Bell and his two brothers. His two brothers, Mark and
Mad Dog,
Mike Bell, who is also a professional wrestler. And the three of these kids all grew up as sort of, you know, chubby kids, you know, in the schoolyard. And eventually...
all massive wrestling fans and then got into weightlifting.
Yeah. So why don't you... how do you want to do this review? Or what do we...
Yeah, well, let's just talk about some of the highlights of the documentary. We can start with the Bell family because that is who this entire documentary is based upon. Mike Bell, let's chat about him first. He's the oldest brother, and this was I remember when we watched this screening way, there was a Q&A afterwards, and I asked about the legalities of going around to getting all this footage here that you got in this documentary, because believe me, Wei, I think this certainly a sensitive issue to you and I when it comes to trying to get WWE footage into a documentary.
Yes.
It is not easy.
No,
in fact, it can cost quite a lot. But unfortunately, we're in Canada where this fair use of clips law is not applicable to us in Canada. But in the U.S., there is this kind of... And essentially, I don't know all the ins and outs of this, but essentially Chris Bell explained that through a great legal team and by...
Actually, the response he gave you during the screening itself, he just said, he basically just said no comment at that point in the film's release.
Well,
I don't know. You probably think of an answer he gave you afterwards.
Perhaps. But, I mean, they've sold this and
yep.
with all this footage in there.
Hulk Hogan is on the poster.
And he's kind of on the poster.
Isn't that him?
They covered his face.
Oh, they did?
Probably for a reason.
Huh.
So anyway, we get to see clips of Mike Bell performing as a jobber in mid-90s in the WWF.
On Raw.
Yeah, which I would imagine was all just their own VHS tapes that they had saved all these years
yep.
because there's no way WWF was handing this over for a poignant view at steroid abuse.
After Chris Benoit.
That's an important timeline to look at. This came out about a year after the Benoit murder-suicide, and that would be addressed in this documentary.
Yes.
So Mike Bell is the type of wrestler that I think you've probably seen in just about any indie organization you've gone to, a guy that a former athlete, played football in university, wanted to become a pro wrestler, and really one of the... Even prior to, you know, what would happen in the aftermath of the release of this documentary, I looked at this guy as just a very sad and tragic guy in that here he's got this beautiful wife, he's got a family, and yet it's not enough for him. And he literally says this during the documentary, like, I'm paraphrasing, but if I don't make it, my life's a waste.
Yeah.
I'm a failure. And he's saying this with his wife seated next to him.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just... You felt sorry for this guy up until a point where you almost were, he almost came across at times, I don't want to say unlikable, but just selfish. Selfish would be the way I would describe him.
Yeah, but I mean,
this guy picks up his entire life and moves to California for this pipe dream, this
right.
unrealistic pipe dream at the age of 36.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, no,
and
absolutely.
And he's training at UPW.
But I don't think you could say that it's necessarily selfish.
I mean, would.
The wife is okay with it. And, you know, this is a story that is not exclusive to pro wrestling. It happens in any field when people just have a dream that they really want to achieve so badly. But yes, at this point, at the age of 35, and no, Mike Bell, not necessarily the best looking in terms of physique, and nor from what we saw in this documentary, the greatest promo out there. Really, no reason that
he was a yeller
would hire him. He was a yeller, yes, and you know, a great fit for a jobber. In fact, he had a very notable match. Perhaps the most notable moment of his in-ring career was an episode of Jacked in probably 2001 or
2001.
Yes, where he fought Perry Saturn.
Literally fought
Perry Saturn. Fucked up some type of move, and in this
Perry
episode,
Saturn just. I would say very unprofessional. Just beat the shit out of this
threw
guy.
Threw him out of the ring. Mike Bell lands on his head and just proceeded to beat the shit out of him on this episode of Jacked. Perhaps the most well-known match in Jacked history.
Easily.
Yeah.
Easily the most. I would say it might have been Velocity with John Cena against Bryan Danielson. But yes, this was probably the most famous match in Jack. When you say Jack, that's the match I always think of, and it's an easily accessible match online if you want to find it. Just a brutal destruction of this man on taped television, which I would say in today's day and age, WWE would not have aired that match.
Probably not, no. But, you know, this documentary, I assume, was probably filmed around maybe 07.
Yeah. And that match 06. Was never discussed in this documentary, nor was it really
it was unnecessary.
The thesis of this documentary at all.
But here's Mike Bell basically 6 or 7 years after that fact, still trying to get into the WWE, still trying to send in his demo tapes to try to get hired. And just no success, unfortunately.
No, and then we have his younger brother Mark, who's kind of seems like a more quiet one of the three, kind of shy, kind of introverted. But I mean, it's his brother interviewing him here, and basically Mike and Mark both have the characteristic in common that they both decided that steroids were necessary for them to progress their professional wrestling career, and this is kind of. Chris Bell kind of positions himself as this guy in the middle. He's not planting his flag on either side of the debate. He's not saying, you know, steroids are this evil, nor is he praising the use of steroids. And he's basically coming at it from someone that grew up idolizing the likes of Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, He-Man, and Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan, who was a major, major part of this documentary, at least the idea of Hulk Hogan and the character of Hulk Hogan, the same guy who, you know, in the 80s, and he told all these children, hey, just work out, take your prayers, and take your vitamins and say your prayers, and you can achieve the American dream.
Yes, and as Chris grew up and suddenly realized that this American dream was very much contaminated with chemicals with his heroes in the center of controversy. This began to kind of put into question a lot of his moral beliefs, and it led to him experimenting with steroids but could not continue because of the guilt he found. And I think that's kind of what led to him on this path on this documentary is why should I feel guilty about this when everything around me is influenced here by steroids life.
I thought Chris Bell, just as a filmmaker, did a tremendous job of weaving a thought process going from, you know, his youth and characters and people like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Hulk Hogan and, I don't know, just idols out there that look at these massively built, wonderful, physiqued guys. And then linking it basically to these people basically got to where they are. I mean, not through what they preach, but through means that I guess everybody looks down upon. And if these guys need to do this to get there, then why can't I?
And we also hear from Mark talking about how he started with steroids, and then he began using other drugs as well, including ecstasy, pot, and cocaine. And this is where he brings up, the quote is, "I would rather be dead than average." And that was a... And that was something that would be explored later on in the documentary.
Yeah,
as
we
well.
should mention. Shortly after this documentary came out, Mike Bell actually passed away.
Yeah, he was in rehab after the release of this documentary and actually died in the rehab facility. So that, it was a really sad follow-up here that I don't know if maybe on the DVD release they probably had a, you know, afterwards to with an update or something. But
I'm not sure. I like didn't this wouldn't the DVD have come? I'm really not sure. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'm sure. But just to see this scene, especially knowing that fact, and the various scenes throughout this movie, it's almost as if they really saw this coming. And the dad himself actually says, their father says, I expect to find him dead at some point.
That scene to me was so just surreal of just how openly honest the father was towards his son, knowing that this is on camera. It was almost like you felt like you were eavesdropping here.
Well, you have to imagine that he was saying it as a message to his son, knowing that his son was eventually going to watch it. And you have to wonder, Mike Bell watching this documentary, hearing his dad say that, how that must have affected him. And maybe that was the reason why he did eventually go to rehab. I guess, you know, man, some addictions are just very hard to kick.
You mentioned Chris Bell here being kind of a, you know, the focal point of this. I thought the most sympathetic character in this whole documentary was the mother.
Who just is completely unaware that her kids, her beautiful children, have been experimenting with drugs and steroids this whole time. And the reaction that they capture on camera, it's absolutely heartbreaking.
It was very difficult at times. I mean, this is like your blue-collar family that grew up in the Northeast. You know, your parents are, you know, these are two very stereotypical parents that you would classify that brought up their kids in the 80s. And their mom is just this lovable mother. And the heartbreak that she is put through in this documentary is just like painful at times, culminating with Chris basically sitting down with her and explaining who her sons are and that they use steroids. And then it's like, where do you think they got the steroids? It was from your brother, Mom. And she just has this moment where she's just in stunned silence and just says, why are you doing this to me? I mean, this poor woman is just put through this unbelievable series of emotions in this documentary. Mm-hmm. And she, to me, was the most balanced of this entire conversation in that she basically told them that, you know, you don't have to be more than you are. Why? Yeah. And she asks these fundamental questions that I think a lot of people kind of circumvent when they're going down this certain path of steroid abuse or any other drug.
And that's really the heart of the message of this documentary. I think a lot of people see this documentary and mistaken it as a pro-steroid documentary, which it isn't. This documentary,
they give voice to people that are pro-steroids, but they also, I thought, did an equal job of looking at the anti-side of it.
It's more a documentary about the male self-image and how, why is it that certain men and men in certain fields, especially in pro wrestling, feel the need to look this way? Why do, I don't know, well, why do we care so much about, you know, the way we look or having to be the very best in the field, so much so that we would rely on a banned substance in order to do it? And I think that's, you know, that was the message that the mom put out there, and that's the message that Chris Bell investigates here, is, you know, the subtitle of this documentary. It's bigger, stronger, faster with an asterisk, and then the
side effects of being American.
Side effects of being American. And it really, it's trying to investigate, hey, are we trying so hard here to be the very best, to be American number one? And I'll extend this to Canadian, the Canadian perspective too. It really, like, you know, what in North America, we're very influenced by what we see in American media, but, yeah, like, is it getting out of hand? Do we want to be the best so badly that we would rely on things that could potentially be harmful?
Well, as someone way that you've followed, I mean, pro wrestling, MMA for as long as you have, I think that's a culture certainly very much embedded in this drug culture. I mean, what are some of your thoughts when it comes to professional wrestling? Do you feel that there would be, if you were to throw out a number of guys in the industry right now that are using steroids, do you think that number would drastically drop if tomorrow they were no longer wrestling?
Sorry, what's that?
Oh. If you know, but, say like, you know, throwing like, out a number, like
how many people are taking steroids in pro wrestling is what you're asking.
And would that number be similar if they were outside of the industry? If they were to stop wrestling tomorrow, would they get off whatever substances they're on?
If they were to stop wrestling, what would they be doing if they weren't wrestling?
Let's say they could.
Like you mean just for their own I guess
I throw this up. Here's my one example. Okay, back in 2001, when Chris Benoit broke his neck, he was out for an entire year, and that entire year he remained on steroids. Well, he was on it for a full year while he was off television.
Hold on, but he was still training to come back. He's still a pro wrestler, but
he could not train for a solid amount of months during that time period. He never cycled off, which is almost unheard of when it comes to pro wrestlers and steroids. You cycle off. He did not ever cycle off.
So he didn't train at all, and he just took steroids for what reason?
That's my question. Is that there's obviously
like does it get to a point where your body is so dependent on it that if you don't take it, there are negative side effects?
I've never taken steroids, so I can't speak to this firsthand, but I would imagine from people that I have spoken to that have used steroids, one of the heaviest things to take, though, is that looking at yourself in the mirror with this inflated image, and suddenly you're off, you cannot maintain that image, and that is the toughest part for a lot of people, is just mentally accepting that you are less than what you were on these magical drugs.
Well, absolutely. I'm sure it's very depressing to see yourself different. And maybe that's why Benoit decided to maintain, just to maintain what he could, right? But my question I've always thought is, why does there have to be a certain look that we identify pro wrestlers with? I mean, if you look back to the 80s or to even prior, like some of these 70s tapes, wrestlers weren't jacked guys. The image of a tough man is not necessarily a man with giant muscles. It's more about attitude. I mean, a guy with a gut can look like he can kick anyone's ass. And why can't we get back to that?
I don't know if that is the case, though. I don't know if enough people do think like that in terms of...
But it's all perception, and especially when you can control the outcome and the storylines. I mean, like Steve Austin, did he look like the most jacked guy?
Again, I don't want to name names, but I mean, it's impossible to look at a guy and say, that guy's on steroids, that guy's not on steroids.
It's impossible to tell. Oh, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying of all the people out there,
I would say Austin did look like a pretty jacked guy.
Okay. But not, he was no Rob Terry.
Well, that's the thing is, like, you look now at a Rob Terry, like, that's a ridiculous look. Mm-hmm. Like, that's ridiculous. And that suddenly becomes, oh, well, that guy is the prototype of what someone on the juice is, whether he is or isn't. However, I remember years and years ago, Josh Barnett, when he got popped in the UFC, he was a guy that always had love handles. He was the look of a guy that, oh, there's your average guy that's, you know, he's definitely battling genetics and is just... And then that guy gets popped, and it suddenly puts into question. It's like, you cannot simply look at a guy that, okay, a Rob Terry, that is the guy that is on steroids, versus probably the most unsuspecting people you might watch on TV every week very well could be on something. Mm. And I think this goes back to, in terms of what the public buys in this sense, in that there is some correlation here between, you know, presenting certain body types that people respond to.
Yeah, and what's that?
I feel that there is certainly a mentality amongst fans that they look at people and they now have this prototype in their mind of what a wrestler should look like.
Okay.
And that extends to the wrestlers themselves, who feel we have to look a certain way. And it's completely unspoken, I'm sure of, but people understand that, hey, this guy's getting a push. This is a cosmetic industry, and I have to play catch up if my body is not at that level.
Right. But why does it have to be that way? I guess I just feel like you can change the public's perception. You can change it to whatever you want if you do enough to, make up for maybe a guy's less than perfect physique.
I think that, I mean, bigger athletes have always been a draw for people. I mean, look at the struggles, just in a smaller sense, that the flyweights are having right now in the UFC. What is the typical complaint you hear from just average people off the street? Is, I could kick that guy's ass. You should have been at the weigh-ins at UFC 152. It was at Extreme Couture, and it's just everyone, look how tiny those guys are. Look how small they are.
But in the octagon, it's not that big of a difference.
People boo them.
They boo them because they had shitty fights and because they don't have any name value. And I think that's the main problem with the flyweights. Look at Manny Pacquiao. How big is he?
Well, there's a guy that's jumped 8 weight classes in his career.
Okay, but how big is he on average?
He fought last at 148 pounds. Okay. You're right. There's absolute. Listen, I'm not arguing the fact that
combat sports star
Floyd Mayweather is the and Manny Pacquiao are the two biggest draws in combat sports right now, mm-hmm. and are both well under 200 pounds.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can definitely make that argument that it's much more than body type. And how many examples have there been in pro wrestling of your Psycho Sids, of your Giant Gonzalez's, of these giant guys that a body's great, but it's not everything.
Especially, I think, in pro wrestling right now, the problem, especially in the WWE, is that your bigger guys aren't even bigger guys anymore. They're just average now. So that it really, it's almost like a race to see who can be the biggest, because everybody wants to be the biggest guy, and as a result, your biggest guy is the smallest guy.
Now, one of the biggest arguments when it comes to professional wrestling that a number of wrestlers will defend steroid use is that this is not a real competition. Why should we be tested? If you're going to test us, you should be testing musicians.
Right.
What do you think about that argument?
I thought that was a really interesting argument in the documentary as well. Basically, Chris Bell says, listen, people who use steroids for professional wrestling, they are doing basically just using a substance to help them do their job better, much like how a musician might take beta blockers to prevent getting nervous, or how a student might take Adderall to help him study for a test. And I guess you're asking for my opinion, and I think that I feel
like, how would you feel if tomorrow the WWE announced we're abandoning our wellness policy?
Right. Well, I think it just comes down to what are the negative effects of steroids, and if they are,
and that's something that they bring up heavily in this documentary, yeah. is that this cannot be studied because this is an illegal substance. It has been since 1989. Mm-hmm. It's doctors can prescribe it, but it is a prohibited substance, yeah. and that is one reason why the WWE could never say, oh, steroids are allowed. It's illegal.
Mm-hmm. And I thought Chris Bell did a good job. Well, really, I felt that at a certain point in the documentary, there was a certain lean towards arguing for steroids. Maybe he did that, I think, because there's just been so much misinformation out there in the media about the negative effects of steroids. And this is the point in the documentary where he talks about the Chris Benoit case, how everybody initially linked those murders somehow to steroids, which you and I both know, John, and everybody listening, hopefully, know that's completely bullshit. Steroids had nothing to do with that you know, horrific accident. It was, if anything, it might have been the head trauma that was more to do with than steroids. But here we are, Nancy Grace, whatever, all these media outlets just basically blaming roid rage. And I think those studies need to be done in order for a proper assessment of the dangers, because I think right now these substances are banned because everybody's afraid that, you know, they'll harm the people taking them. But they argue in this film that these effects aren't as great as people claim, that there is a safe way of taking steroids, and that once you stop taking steroids, much of these effects will be reversed. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. I'd like to know the study.
Well, that's, to me, it's always been an issue when it comes to the effects of steroids and people looking for a black and white, are they good, are they bad answer. To me, it's like you could make the same argument with cocaine. There are people that could probably use cocaine their entire life and have no overdose, and they could be fine. And there could be other people who instantly it could kill them. So I don't think there's ever going to be that, well, steroids will kill you or steroids will be beneficial. I have no doubt that there are some people who have probably used steroids in modest amounts throughout their career, and maybe they'll never have physical issues. What we do know, Wei, is that following professional wrestling as we have, I mean, the death rate is astounding. And you can't simply ignore the fact that a lot of these people were open about the steroid abuse. And as well, you can't ignore the fact that it was likely steroids were just a mixture of what was a very unhealthy lifestyle that included many different drugs, including, you know, human growth hormone, which is something that you can't even detect right now without using a synthetic blood test. I mean, you're looking at something where it's there's no easy answer about steroids and what they're using, because typically they're stacked with other drugs that are doing who knows what on your
you're absolutely right. It's different for everybody, and maybe some people you know, you can look at any drug or even caffeine. Some people might you know, like myself, I'd go crazy on caffeine after a while. But at what point does a government have to come in and regulate, you know? At what point does the government have to say, okay, I know most of you can accept this, or maybe some of you can accept this, but a lot of people can't. I don't know. It just it becomes all about politics at some point.
And that was a large reason here when the WWF in the late 80s, they went forth to in New Jersey to be deregulated so that the commissions in that state would not be testing them. And the one state that was the holdout was Oregon. And as a result, the WWE did not go to Oregon. And it was simply because they wanted to test the wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And the WWE avoided this. And this, they weren't even wanting to test for recreational drugs. It was simply steroid testing. And the WWF refused to go into that state. They didn't go in there until 2003 when they finally, deregulated professional wrestling. And to me, it's the difference to me is that in a professional wrestling locker room, yes, this is not a quote unquote sport where the competition is in front of the camera, but there is very much a real competition behind the camera where if you and I are equal, Wei, and you decide that you are going to turn your body into something gigantic and you are going to put on 60 pounds of muscle, and I watch this, and over the course of a year since you and I have signed our contracts, you are suddenly getting a main event push with your brand new body, and I'm toiling away on main event or on superstars, is there not an unspoken pressure on me that I have to go in the same direction? And that to me is my issue, is that it's not simply freedom of choice for a lot of these guys who get on steroids. I don't think many people willingly inject steroids wanting to do this. I think a lot of them, if all things were equal, they could simply go to the gym. I mean, these are not unhealthy people. These are top caliber athletes for the most part that are competing in professional wrestling right now that take as good a care as their body as anyone. Should that not be enough? That simply, that kind of lifestyle, it doesn't necessitate steroids. But obviously, there's an implied pressure that that is not enough. Yes. And that is where the people that don't want to use steroids, I feel, get pigeonholed. And for every Lance Storm that can get through his career not using any kind of steroids, other guys, I just don't feel, have that confidence in themselves that a natural body will get them to where they want to be in this industry and provide for your family and make money that is going to, that trumps the risk you are taking of what this mystery drug will do to me.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's a problem that'll really ever get fixed. You know, because clearly, it hasn't been right now, and it's been a topic of discussion for probably 20 years at least right now. The film also talks a little bit about Ben Johnson. And Ben Johnson was actually at this screening where John and I first went to see this documentary. I also felt like, well, basically, it talks about the Ben Johnson scandal. Ben Johnson, former Olympian for Canada, who won, what was his race? Was it a
100 meters?
Okay. So, fastest man in the world.
Yes.
He won the race and was eventually busted for steroids, you know, huge black eye, I guess, for Canadian Olympics.
Yeah, this was at the 88 games.
Yes, in Seoul.
And just forever, he became the face of steroids.
Yep, and the award was then given to second place winner Carl Lewis. Is that right?
Who it later became known also failed a drug test.
Well, he wasn't known at this point. He won the gold medal at that point. But then I just found it so amazing that not only did Chris Bell get access to Ben Johnson, but got access to Carl Lewis and brought up to Carl Lewis, hey, did you not get busted as well at this point?
And said, and his defense was, well, it was for
cough medicine.
And they came up with this defense of inadvertent use. And this was allowed, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, it absolutely is ridiculous.
I had always heard a story that at these games, when this was quietly brought up that Carl Lewis had, and I don't know if this is true, but I remember speaking to someone that had a connection here to NBC, who at the time basically alerted the IOC that if you drag our American athlete through the mud, this television contract could be in question. Now, I don't know if that's a true story or not, mm-hmm. but that's what you're talking about here in terms of, you know, the shady background that yeah. goes on when an American athlete is potentially failing a drug test versus a Canadian right. who has a lot less leverage.
Yeah, and this documentary seems to be as critical, you know, about athletics as it is about government and politics and how hypocritical people are when it comes to steroids, only when it comes and whether it helps them or not. So here he also presents a case where George Bush helped sign that sign some type of thing to ban steroids.
To deregulate the FDA.
Yet in the same year he hired Arnold Schwarzenegger as his national physical education ambassador. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, who himself has admitted to steroid use in the past, going on to become governor. And just Chris Bell digs up like an old interview where Arnold talks about using steroids in the past. And then an interview after he becomes governor, basically making a complete 180. Arnold even at one point asking all his posters to be taken off of Gold's Gym. And Chris Bell basically is there to shoot all these posters getting taken down. The wonderful job at pointing out the hypocrisy of people, especially in politics when it comes to this topic.
Yeah, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is really kind of the poster child throughout this documentary. I mean, he is Chris Bell's hero here that really accentuates this conflict with Chris Bell. Like, here is this guy that is, you know, represented this entire culture and was as guilty as anybody for going this direction with steroids, and then basically trying to profit off of this, but at the same time distance himself from this community and angering a lot of people in the process.
He asked the question, did steroids help Arnold Schwarzenegger get to where he is today? And you can definitely question that. If Arnold didn't have his physique that he built with the help of steroids, would he have had his career, which led to his current standing in American society?
I thought part of the most fascinating part of the documentary was where they got out of sport, where sports is really the one area where performance enhancement is considered just simply cheating. It's pretty much one and the same. Mm-hmm. So they took the argument outside of sport and applied it to, as we mentioned, into like music, where we had these like clarinet players that would take like
beta blockers,
anti-anxiety pill. Beta blockers. There was Adderall within the use of kids at high schools to help them work better. Then they started looking at altitude chambers that Floyd Landis was using, which would basically increase your red blood cells and increase your oxygen.
Fighters use this. BJ Penn
uses lots of people use these. These are very much in vogue. And then talking about like blood doping and, you know, right down to Tiger Woods getting laser eye surgery so he has 20/15 vision. Mm-hmm. Is that not performance enhancing? And it's this weird theme of what is cheating versus what is not cheating. Yeah. These fighter pilots that they show that are using performance enhancement drugs, mm-hmm. and they actually show them that where they got involved in Afghanistan in this friendly fire where they killed these two fighters by mistake. And
as a side effect of apparently a side effect of whatever drug they were using.
That was eventually cited as their reason for this friendly fire. Yeah. But, man, it gets into all these different, like, issues. Like, if I was a cop and knew I would have to go out on the street and mm-hmm. defend my life against people who are on God knows what, I mean, yeah. are you saying that you wouldn't want to, you know, effectively defend yourself to the best of your ability?
Okay, but in the event of that friendly fire, for instance, you got to know what the side effects are of the drug that you're taking. It could be negative in the other way. And that's where studies need to come in. Studies need to come out about steroids, about what the side effects are, what the harmful effects are, how it could be used, if at all, safely. It seems like it can, but I think there's so little we know, it seems, still about all these medications.
Isn't that a bit of a contradiction right there? Is that using steroids in a moderate use almost is a complete opposite of why someone would want to get on steroids. Like your whole mentality is, I want to be above what my body is producing.
Yeah.
Like, what is the point of using steroids in a small amount results?
Oh, you could still get above what your body normally would be at without steroids.
Is it appreciably more than what?
I don't know. I'm not using steroids.
You should try. You should do your own unofficial study.
Okay. Why not?
I don't know where I could hook you up with some stenozolol.
HGH?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you could go to your doctor and say you have low testosterone.
I can, yeah, and I can get it legally.
That part scared the fuck out of me, how easy it is to put, like, anyone on some of these fucking pills and shit. You watch this piece, this was, what an indictment of the FDA and the lack of any watchdog groups for some of these.
Yeah.
These pills,
and it's not just America. I know people in Canada that are able to get access to drugs. This is easily as well. Basically, Chris Bell goes to his doctor, says, "What does he say? I'm not feeling very energetic." Does some tests, gets a bottle of hormone delivered to his
in the
door.
Mail.
Yeah, just
his brother just orders them right off the internet. Mm-hmm. I mean, easily accessible. They talk about you can go right down to Mexico and walk into a convenience store. When Jason Agnew was down in Mexico, he walked in a convenience store, and they have steroids on sale, and they had Somas on sale.
Yeah,
it's like going to 7-Eleven.
Yeah, it really is. Another part, I think, of the documentary that really stood out to me was when Chris went to talk to the father of a child named Tyler Hooten, who was a kid that killed himself, and his death was blamed on him. This was a child,
This was like a high school student.
A high school kid who had been on steroids for his, I guess, high school football team.
The Little League. He played baseball.
And eventually was prescribed off of it.
And went cold turkey.
And
while he was still on this antidepressant drug, Lexapro.
And this father later on went on a campaign basically condemning steroids and for causing his son the depression that ended up forcing him to commit suicide. And here Chris Bell goes to his father's home, basically has a discussion with him. A very hard scene to watch, actually, because here you have
this is uncomfortable.
You have Chris Bell, who, you know, kind of has a stance. His stance is that I think he's calling bullshit, basically, on Tyler Hooten's death being anything linked to steroids. And here is his father, who has basically devoted his entire life to this cause. And just to see the two kind of go back and forth, it was a little hard to watch, but very interesting.
Yeah, and that's what Chris brings up. You know, could this not have been something that was a side effect of Lexapro and being on an antidepressant?
Yeah.
And he said, our concern, we're not fighting antidepressants this is a steroid issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I mean, and he brings up the fact that the local Major League Baseball team, the Texas Rangers, I think, they were going to host an anti-steroid night, which, believe me, Major League Baseball hosting that is a bit of a hypocritical stance anyway. But nonetheless, Chris brings up the fact, do you not feel it's strange that Major League Baseball and this stadium are going to hold an anti-steroid night where they're going to be readily serving alcohol that kills way more people than steroids?
Mm-hmm.
And the father basically just says, listen, my son is dead. He's dead. Look at his picture. And it was very uncomfortable. And this somewhat reminded me of Chris Benoit's father, who, my God, what this man has gone through is just, you would never wish on anybody. And when he does interview, I mean, this man is convinced that it was head trauma that caused Chris to do what he did. And that's probably his only way to live with this and to explain it to himself of what happened to my son. And unfortunately, you just can't give a concrete answer. Mm-hmm. Maybe getting off steroids did cause this guy to kill himself.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
There's no way to determine why someone kills themselves
or
does something so horrific that Chris Benoit does. But what everyone tries to do is simply put an answer on this. And as we saw in the wake of everything with Chris Benoit, it's steroids. It's steroids. Just searching for that answer. What explains all that? What explains the unexplainable?
How do you imagine how do you explain the mind of a psychopath? It's hard.
Exactly.
You can't
Okay, well, this is obviously what led to this, and this caused this. I mean, there's just, you're not going to be able to explain something that is just unexplainable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a documentary, I just thought it captured so many wonderful, engaging and thought-provoking topics and scenes. I just thought good job as a film.
I just want to run through some of the characters that we were introduced to throughout this documentary and get some of your thoughts. There was Greg Valentino, the man with the world's largest biceps, whose autobiography I've actually read.
Have you?
Yes.
Well, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Greg Valentino, please do yourself a favor and Google search this man, because I can't describe it. It's just his arms. Well, think Scott Steiner. Think Scott Steiner.
Times three.
Yeah. Like Scott Steiner.
This literally looks like there is some object implanted into his arms, like a bowling ball or something.
Yeah, I think Scott Steiner, like a cross with like a horse.
And this guy is obviously someone that is very much pro steroids. Discusses the fact that, you know, this is gross. No girl wants to be with a guy like this, but I can't resist when I walk into a club and the guys are just like in awe of me and everyone is in awe of my arms. I walk into a club and I am the star. It's like people cannot stop looking at me, and he's addicted to that.
Yeah, yeah. He says he's very self-aware that he looks gross, and he's very critical of Arnold Schwarzenegger, who too, just basically being a hypocrite here, a guy who was on steroids and now is basically turning his back on all the people that, were just in the same position as he was.
There was a PSA ad about roid rage starring a young Ben Affleck. Did you catch this?
Jesus, this was awesome.
This was like Reefer Madness,
exactly.
Buddy.
This was like Reefer Madness, but it was
like
steroids.
Slapped his girlfriend and just is like, he's in this disheveled house, just lying on the floor crying.
I gotta search this out, because this looks awesome.
Yeah.
It stars Ben Affleck, of all people, suffering from the perceived effects of roid rage.
Ben Affleck clearly would not say no to anything at this point.
No,
in his
you
career.
Go. You go from Argo to this.
Christian Boving, who was a male model who was on steroids at the age of 16, and this is where they were looking into the whole supplement industry and how some of these magazines greatly enhanced the images of these models. And actually, Christian Boving was fired from his agency after this documentary came out.
It's really amazing to me the amount of honesty that Chris Bell was able to get from his subjects, going as far as basically all the people, anybody who was free to admit to it. would admit to it. And a case like this, guy, I guess maybe stupidly admitting on camera that he did this. But nonetheless, and it goes on to show, you know, just the bullshit of photoshopping too, with all those before and after ads with health models.
Yeah. Then we also had a strength coach from Columbus, Louis Simmons, who had been on steroids for 36 years. And
this was Smelly's weightlifting coach.
Yes. And talks about the benefits of steroids. And they talk about how Smelly, Mark Bell, he was going to get off steroids because his wife wanted him to. So they go to this competition where it's his last competition before he gets off steroids. And they don't give us a timeline, but we go to the next scene where Chris is talking to him. And already Mark is saying, oh, well, I won't be off forever. I mean, I'm going to get back on them. This is part of my life. She's just going to have to deal with it. I'm going to use steroids for my whole life.
Clearly, I mean, he's happier. Like, he seems to prefer his life when he's on steroids. And it's like when, I don't know, for some people who maybe have in other societies who have like a really negative effect on drug like marijuana, for instance, and a lot of people still do. But I'd say for the most part, at least with people our age living where we do, it's a pretty relaxed opinion. And you're like, okay, you smoke weed, okay, whatever. But yet, you know, you tell maybe somebody like my mother that, you know, somebody smokes weed, and she'd be horrified. To her, I think it just comes down to a lack of knowledge about what these effects are. And maybe that's the case with this wife too, not necessarily knowing what the effects of steroids are, but in her mind, this is a drug that's, you know, maybe as bad as cocaine, or maybe she has seen some negative effects from this guy and simply, you know, is just very disappointed.
Well, note, trivia note, that on Eddie Guerrero's death certificate, the cause of death is listed as steroids.
Right.
An interesting note.
Yeah.
The final scene, Way, I thought this was really well done, this final scene where Chris is with his parents and they're at this this weightlifting competition where Mark lifts 705 pounds and all three of them just jump up rejoicing, and it ends on this freeze of the family and Chris just narrating that, you know, yes, steroids are...
Look at us. Look how happy we are.
And this is the cause of steroids. Mark is on steroids accomplishing this feat, and look how happy we are.
So I guess it ends with a message like, is there anything wrong with this? I mean...
And I like that. The question is left for you, the viewer, to decide and make your own. This is kind of some arguments, pro and con, and you are left to make your own decision.
Yeah, it ends with that, but it's further than that. I mean, it ends with a montage of a bunch of clips, and you know, sort of clips like George Bush saying how Bell narrates that in America, cheaters prosper, and it shows a clip of Bush, and he goes on basically to end the documentary saying, in America, there's a clash between doing the right thing and being the best. Where it seems like in many cases to be the best, you can't always do the right thing. So which one is it? What should we value more? What should an individual in our society value more?
Well, first of all, do you feel that's accurate? When it comes to American culture, I don't know.
It's such a big question to ask. Certainly, I mean, if you ask me in politics, you certainly can't do the right thing at all times to get to a position of incredible power. I don't think even in business, I think you gotta maybe cut some corners and piss a lot of people off in order to get to the top.
Sure.
Does that relate to steroids? Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm not an athlete. I imagine, honestly, if I was a UFC fighter, if I was a WWE wrestler, probably I would be using steroids. I don't think there'd be a way around it.
I just see, I thought that the most interesting one to me was with Mark and with Mike Bell, where, you know, it was Mike who said, you know, I would rather be dead than average. And then later we see Mark, who has promised his wife he's going to get off steroids, and then boom, does this 180. Mm. And to me, it's like, I could not imagine putting myself on this level above my own family. I just don't feel that I would feel right as a person doing this. And maybe that's just me.
Well, I imagine at that point, you're probably not aware that you are putting that much strain on your loved ones. You know, it's probably got...
And that's the moral issue here. I don't think these are bad people, but... Yeah.
Just deep into whatever they're into. And I think the further point is that, as Chris Bell says, it's a psychological issue with him and his brothers. How him and his brothers...
were not good enough.
Just don't feel that good enough about themselves to the point where they need to rely on a thing like steroids.
And that's what the mother brings up at the end, is that... you need to work with what you were given and realize that you are good enough, and that's a bigger problem than simply these steroids.
Absolutely, and that's why I feel like this doc I found so engaging, because so often you hear, you know, on TV specials and whatnot, a lot about the media's role in affecting the female self-image. Rarely do you hear about the effect a G.I. Joe action figure or
Arnold
Schwarzenegger poster has on a male self-image. And I thought, to me, that's what I got most out of this doc was, hey, are we taking these things too seriously, especially in professional wrestling, especially in pro wrestling, where it seems like... John Cena is the epitome of a man, you know, which is ridiculous. There's none of us ever would be able to look like John Cena, you know, without something. Certainly not eating Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah. And one last thing to that point is that during this thing, they bring up the congressional hearings on Major League Baseball. And that they spent, it was like 8 or 9 days on these congressional hearings, which were more time spent on this baseball issue than on other domestic problems in the U.S. And this drew a lot of criticism from people, is like, how can you spend all this money dealing with some guy throwing a ball? And to me, it was like, the issue to me is not throwing the ball, it's the next generation of Chris Bells that are growing up idolizing these people. And that is what they do, is idolize these people. Yeah. And when they find out this deep, dark secret of how they throw this ball, feeling that, well, then that is okay. And that is the way I need to, that's the path I need to go. And Chris Bell to me was your example A of someone who did steroids, not because he wanted to, but because he wanted to be these people.
Mm-hmm.
Point blank says it.
Sure.
He would not have done steroids had these people not been his heroes that he found out later had, you know, taken different paths to get that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, he says that, but at the same time, he also says, if I decide to take steroids, is there anything wrong with it? Are there negative effects? Are the negative effects as bad as people claim? And in many cases, probably not as bad as people claim from what we're led to believe by watching this. But again, I'd really like to hear, you know, I'd like to see those studies done. I'd like to know exactly, you know, I like the evidence to be there, whether or not this is acceptable or whether or not it is responsible for deaths.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a wonderfully thought-provoking film, and I thought very well put together too. I tried to look up other works that Chris Bell has done, and really doesn't seem like he's done much else. Certainly not another documentary after this, which I was a little disappointed.
Oh, you've become a very big focal point in this community. I mean, this was a documentary that really spoke to a lot of people, got tons of praise from people, and he's someone that is very much closely now associated with this entire culture. So a very, very well done documentary. And at this point, we're going to go back to that Law episode from 2008, where Chris Bell was on with Dan the Mouth Lavransky.
But right now, I want to welcome a very special guest to the program. I got a chance to see this latest documentary from this guy, filmmaker. He also had some experience with the WWE as a writer. He was also very much a wrestling fan when he was younger, and he's covered all these different issues in this great new documentary called Bigger, Stronger, Faster. We got to see it here in Toronto as part of the Hot Docs Documentary Festival, but it is going to get a theatrical debut in select theaters in the U.S. starting this Friday, May the 30th. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Chris Bell. Chris, how are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing very well, sir. Congratulations on the documentary. I thought it was an amazing piece of work. I always think that the best documentaries come out of when you can somehow take a broader issue yet give it a personal touch. And I thought it was really amazing the way that you took the steroids issue and discussed the bigger picture but used it within the context of your own personal life.
Well, yeah, you know, my brothers were both on steroids when I was making the movie, and I said, you know, what better time to make a movie about steroids than now, you know, and both my brothers are using steroids. So I actually used my brothers to illustrate the point and kind of demonstrate the fact that, like, we are all part of this problem, and we're all part of this addiction to basically being bigger, bigger, stronger, faster, and, like, being part of the American psyche, basically.
Right, right. Now, was it tough on the family? Like, what? How did your brothers, your mother, I mean, how did everybody feel about this all being exposed in this documentary?
Well, you know what? My younger brother basically was the one, he was the genesis for the movie, basically. I said, hey, what do you think about Mark McGwire using the juice, or using Andro, basically, you know, using the supplement Andro? And my brother laughed. He said, you know, Mark McGwire's not using Andro. I think he's on the juice. I think he's taking steroids. I go, are you kidding me? And so my younger brother is actually kind of the genesis for the whole movie. And my family really was the ones that they just wanted to tell the truth about the issue, because I think you see in the media a lot of times people lying about the issue and people not willing to tell the truth or telling mistruths or myths about steroids.
I thought one of the most interesting parts about the documentary was the way that you kind of explored that, and that you didn't try to go for like one concrete answer. And you know, it's not a black and white documentary. It's not this is good, this is bad. You managed to show all the gray surrounding it as well. And I'm guessing that was part of your approach, right?
Well, yeah. You know, like I look at it, it's not a black and white issue. It's kind of a red, white, and blue issue. I think it's an issue that affects all of America. We are a country that is obsessed with winning. We're obsessed with, like, being the biggest, strongest, fastest of anybody. So I think that, like, it's an issue that affects all Americans all across the board. And it's not just winning in sports, like winning in politics, winning in, you know, the military, like winning anywhere. Like, we are obsessed with winning.
Right.
And so I think that that's a big issue in America that nobody ever really discusses.
Right. No, it's very true, man. It's very true. The other thing I really liked in it too is the way that you portrayed, like you talked about how you used steroids yourself briefly, but you didn't feel it was morally right. And you very rarely hear that argument. It's mostly worrying about the physical aspects and stuff. You never really hear anyone say, I don't think it's morally right.
Well, you know what? Like my problem with steroids really was like, I was using steroids and I was going into the gym and I was looking bigger, you know, and like people would come up to me and say, hey man, you're looking pretty jacked. Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing to get there? And I was like really embarrassed to say that I was doing steroids. So I'd never admit that I was doing steroids. So people say, hey, what are you doing? What are you on? And I go, oh, I'm on nothing, you know? And so I think I understand a lot of athletes and the way that these people are approaching it. You know, when people say, why isn't Roger Clemens telling the truth? And say, why would he? Because I think that people take away everything you've earned naturally. You know, when you say you did steroids, once you say you did steroids, it's kind of over for most people. They don't understand the problem.
Right, right. Well, now, I mean, you did work with the WWE in that, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But in the last little while, especially after the Chris Benoit tragedy, the WWE has definitely focused more on what they call their wellness policy and trying to patrol this kind of stuff and try to make sure that guys don't die too young from the effects of this. How do you feel about the WWE's approach so far to steroids over the last little while? Because it has been a big issue for them once again.
Well, you know, working for the WWE and, like, my brothers work for the WWE and stuff like that, and I think it's kind of insincere a little bit. I think that Vince is doing a great job of saying, like, hey, look, we're monitoring this problem. But at the same time, the way that they're monitoring the problem isn't the right way. They really need to I think they really need to crack down on the approach to the way that these guys are using painkillers and these other drugs. I mean, what people don't realize, these guys are on the road 200 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think steroids are the problem. I think it's painkillers and all these other drugs we got using. So, you know, look, they can crack down on steroids all they want. I don't think that's going to really solve any of the problems that the wrestlers have. Or, you know, for example, like my older brother was addicted to Oxycontin, probably the most, one of the most addictive drugs on the market. And I don't think that any sort of steroid program is going to really curb that.
Right.
It's going to be more of a program like tailored towards the painkillers and other stuff.
Right, right. No, absolutely. I feel that's a part of it that definitely does need to be dealt with, and it does seem to lead to a lot of the tragic stories that we hear so much now in pro wrestling. Let's talk a little bit about your time in the WWE. You worked on the writing team, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Now, one of the big stories right now in pro wrestling is Michael Hayes just got suspended from the writing team because for 60 days. Apparently, he made some comments to Mark Henry, off-color racist comments. Yeah. I just wanted to get your thoughts on working on the writing team and whether that was, you know, something that you experienced as well.
Well, look, I don't know what Michael Hayes said, but I have to say one thing. Michael Hayes was the nicest, coolest guy when I worked there. And I know Mark Henry well, very well, and I feel like anything that Michael Hayes said that was like racist or off color was probably more of a joke and more of his own personality. But like I said, he was actually the only guy on the writing team that liked me because everybody else hated me. Because when I went to the WWE, I was really good friends with John Cena and The Rock.
Right.
And the rest of the writers hated me because, you know, hey, who's this new guy coming in that's like buddies with the guys that are our top guys, you know. So, like I said, you know, like I just say Michael Hayes was one of my buddies when I was there. He was a good guy. I think that, like, maybe what he said got taken out of context, and that can happen a lot.
Right, right, right. Now, you mentioned that there's lots of rivalries. It sounds to me like, I mean, writers getting mad at each other because you're friends with certain wrestlers. That sounds pretty petty to me.
Well, you know, I just think that's just the way it is. I mean, like, look, Triple H. I think Triple H was the reason I got fired from there, you know? So,
well, like, how long were you with the company?
I was only there for, like, 4 months, maybe.
And why did you get released?
I got released because I wasn't producing good enough stories. But, you know what, like, it's funny because you make a feature film that goes into the theatrical world. It goes into Sundance. It goes into all the other places. Like, but you're not a good enough for the WWE.
Yeah, you didn't come up with good storylines.
Yeah, I'm not smart enough for them or whatever. But you know what? Like, I'm not bitter and I don't care. Like, I love wrestling. I still watch it every day. John Cena is one of my best friends ever.
Right.
And
right.
So I think that the way that I look at it is like, look, it was a learning experience. It was a fun place to grow and learn. And I did it, and it's over. You know.
Now, and how much did that WWE experience shape the film?
I think it shaped it a lot. I mean, like, I think Vince McMahon told me. I told Stephanie when I left there, when I had the kind of talk with her where I was basically fired, I told her, I said, hey, look, you know what? I don't care what happens here. Your father basically taught me how to tell stories because of wrestling, I know how to tell stories. And I know how to tell people beginning to end and kind of the Greek mythology of telling a story. I learned from Vince, you know,
right.
and I admit that. And I say, hey, look, I was a guy who grew up in a wrestling culture. And I appreciate that, and I'm not bitter or mad or anything. I think the WWE is a great program, and I still watch it every day.
Right, right. Now, I have to ask you, because, you know, you talk about him and what an influence he was. Did you try and get Hulk Hogan for the documentary, or did he turn you down?
Well, you know what? I tried to talk to the Hulk, sir, and Hulk just said one thing that was very funny. He just basically said, hey, look, brother, if you want to do, you know, if you want me to be in the documentary, I got to watch my career because I'm doing Hogan Knows Best, which is, like, obviously, you know, killer TV and great, you know, great media press for him.
Yeah.
So he was like, you know, with my career and everything and what I'm doing, I need to be very protective. So I don't know if I can do your documentary because I have to see a rough cut of it first. And obviously, we can't show Hulk Hogan or anybody, like, a rough cut
sure.
of the movie. When you're a documentary filmmaker, that's just something that you don't do. So, you know, Hulk Hogan ended up not being in the film, and we criticized him a little bit, but not really. I mean, I think that, like, in all fairness, that he's another one of my heroes that did steroids, would just tell the truth about it.
Right. I find it very funny that he was so protective, because over the last week or so, he's been incredibly unprotective when it comes to his image. And, I mean, we've heard all this stuff with his son in prison and that. Are you surprised by this current situation that Hogan's in? Because, to me, he's not being very smart or very protective at all. And he was always very good at protecting his image, and now he seems to be letting the whole thing cat out of the bag.
Well, you know what? Like, when I met his son at the WWE, he's such a nice kid. Nick is such a great kid, and like, I met him, and I don't know what happened with him. I wasn't there, and I wasn't, like, involved. But I think that Nick Hogan that we see on TV is different than the Nick Hogan that we see in real life. But I also think, like, you know what? Hulk Hogan was somebody who, you know, like you said, he was very protective of his career or whatever. I think that, he should be. It's his family, and it's very personal. I think a lot of times the media jumps on things so quickly and like, loves to jump on people and, like, show their bad side. But I think, like...
But it's Hogan himself showing his bad side. He's on the phone with his son in prison where public phone calls, he knows they're going to be recorded. He knows they're going to get out, you know.
Well, maybe... Maybe that's his own fault. You know, I think that a lot of it has to do with once you stray from your wife, I think that there's always trouble ahead. You know, and like, look, I grew up in a very moral family with a very moral mom. And if you watch my movie, you'll see that I kind of grew up in a family that doesn't like kind of preach that. But I think that once you leave your wife and once you leave what you've, the mother of your children, I think that like everything else kind of falls in line in a bad way. And so I think that was probably his biggest mistake, was leaving his wife.
We are back here. That was Chris Bell, the director of this documentary, Bigger, Stronger, Faster. And now we're going to head on over to the Law Message Board to chat your feedback from this one. So why don't you start us off, Mr. Ting?
My phone's having issues.
Okay, well, I will start us in. We've got Matt from Bristol in the UK. Hi, guys. Thanks for all your podcasts over the last year. You have really brightened up our commutes into work since I got my wife into listening to you guys last summer. Having never seen this documentary before, I decided to track it down because it sounded like an interesting subject. Personally, I'm very anti-steroids, and like Chris Bell, felt very let down as I grew up and saw that the message that WWF and Hulk Hogan were pushing was somewhat of a sham. I was surprised to find that while my opinion hasn't really shifted on the issue of steroids, the documentary did make me question my opinions on drug cheats and other sports. I still have major concerns about steroid use, but comparing it to other substances, you do have to wonder if with research and careful use, you could be used safely. I guess having grown up watching and reading about the numerous horror stories that have hit the pro wrestling industry because of steroid abuse, I have a natural dislike for any steroid use in the industry. In pro wrestling, steroid use is more of a cosmetic issue than performance enhancing, and I'd rather see smaller guys in entertaining matches than jack guys in more sedate matches. I don't think the risks of steroid use are worth the payoff in terms of the benefit to the product. I can't say I ever really understood the industry's fetish with pushing guys to look a certain way. Anyway, another excellent choice for a review, and I thank you both and Damien for selecting this very thought-provoking movie to review. On a final note, would you guys be able to give a shout-out to my wife, Sophie? On January 6th, it's our second wedding anniversary, and as I am suffering from a really bad cold, I don't think I'll be able to take her out for an anniversary meal, so I'm hoping a shout-out on our favorite podcast will make up for it. It's been a brilliant 2 years, and I couldn't ask for a better wife, particularly since she got me tickets for WrestleMania 29. Thanks once again, guys, for all your hard work over the last few years, and if you're heading down for WrestleMania yourselves, I will be sure to look out for you to shake your hands. Well, thank you very much, Matt, and happy anniversary to you and Sophie.
Yeah, congratulations. Why don't you guys kiss each other right now if you're listening together?
Well, how romantic.
Yeah, there you go. We go to Paul Elliott, who says this was an entertaining documentary even for someone with little knowledge of American sports. The film covered a lot of context, including students on Adderall, as well as themes of hero worship and celebrity, which I wasn't expecting. It wasn't simply about ragging on sportsmen, but looked at deeper questions about how and why Americans use artificial means to improve performance in many facets of life. It also had a personal touch with the Bell family involved and interviews with famous faces to add some pizzazz. I'm someone who prefers his idols to possess a certain unattainable aura about them, rather than being an everyman you might pass on the street. Unfortunately, when it comes to wrestling, many see this as equating to a particularly huge physique. There is no charisma, poise, attire, and talent which go towards creating a superstar aura. Kevin Nash likes to throw out the old hypothetical of a superstar being someone whom everyone stares at as they walk through an airport. However, I think if I saw a smaller guy like Rey Mysterio walk through a busy area in his mask, he would stand out just fine. Then there's the whole Paul Heyman argument that no one looks like a giant when you have a whole company of them. When it comes to possessing a physique to look tough and thus selling yourself as a physical competitor, I don't think size is a factor so much now. I look at a lot of the UFC fighters who still have a neck and do not have biceps touching their ears. That doesn't mean I would mess with them at a bar. They also look a lot healthier and appear as a more attainable model for people looking to get into MMA. It also seems to be the way that they're promoted as viable competitors, that they can win by any many means, and that there is a mental and strategical aspect to how they train and fight. While there are many who are fiercely opposed to steroids in wrestling, I wonder what the reaction would be if a major WrestleMania match or even a whole card was put in jeopardy if someone tested positive just prior to the show. We've had it before with minor shows like the Great American Bash 06. Note, you may have already discussed the WWE steroid policy by now in this podcast, but I'm not sure how that policy applies to Rock and Brock, who are on unconventional agreements, so feel free to expand on this.
Rock does not have a traditional contract with the WWE, so he is not privy to WWE wellness policy testing.
Do you know about Brock Lesnar?
I don't know about Brock Lesnar.
Hmm.
He does have an official contract. We should say, though, not to paint mixed martial arts as this beacon of a drug-free sport.
Yes.
It is very far from it, and I think one that if there was a unannounced testing year-round for a lot of these fighters, I think it would be a major wake-up call to a lot of people. Even with announced testing, I mean, we get tons of this, and I mean, we haven't even got into the discussion that has really permeated MMA over the last year, and that's the use of a testosterone replacement therapy for guys that was addressed in this documentary, but one that a number of fighters have been able to use, and others that have since got off of testosterone replacement therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very I have even more of an issue towards it in mixed martial arts, where you are literally doing damage to somebody, and it is something that could literally be a tragic end if someone were to, you know, it's just a ridiculous unbalancing of the playing field, and has also put into question that a lot of fighters have it in their mind that their opponent is on something, and in order to be safe, I must be on something as well.
Yep,
and that was a, you know, something that was certainly prevalent in the Pride days, and I don't think has dissipated today.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go next to Shane from Tipperary. I don't think wrestlers should use steroids in this day and age because it doesn't affect how I watch and enjoy wrestling. I watch wrestling for the wrestling, the promos and the angles, not how big a wrestler is or how jacked they look. I like how he spelt jacked as in the WWF show. But as the opening of this documentary shows, a graphic of Iron Sheik weighing 258 pounds, he weighed nearly 100 pounds lighter when he broke into wrestling, training with Ken Patera and Ric Flair, and that's why a lot of wrestlers like Dynamite Kid took steroids to add more muscle than they could naturally produce.
JD from GR. This was an excellent pick. The documentary is thorough and covers a lot of the bases in different areas, speaks to a lot of relevant and high-profile people, such as Carl Lewis and Stan Lee, to name but two. The impressive thing is that the film doesn't really seem to strongly take a side and gives both sides of the argument equal time and fair coverage, leading for a very thought-provoking production. Kudos to the director. It is sad to hear that his brother, the one who was aiming to get back into the WWE, passed away, although I don't want to speculate on why. The interesting thing for me is how much drugs are promoted on television in the U.S. To see certain drugs like Plavix, Requip, and similar being directly promoted to consumers is mind-blowing to me. My work is somewhat related to pharmaceutical marketing, and you just cannot do that in most of Europe, and you even have to be very careful with what you can even advertise to doctors. The only things you can put on TV are for very trivial things like headaches, indigestion, not actual chronic illnesses. Those ads just freak the shit out of me. Whenever I watch US TV and it's like the most serene sounding music and the happiest people dancing in a park, and then all of a sudden this like certain side effects of you may be death and blindness and like all this shit. Like it's
like a Saturday Night Live parody commercial, but it's an actual drug.
They all are, and I'm like, after hearing this, would anybody still try it?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Yeah. I mean, that to me is like scarier than I don't know. So it's hearing just somebody tell me the warnings of this. The fact that you're trying to hide this with the sped up voice tells me that I should be worried.
Like, that's where maybe I'm in the minority here. But I look at this thing with steroids, Wei. That's what it is to me. Is like, I don't care if the risk is 1% or 99%. I mean, you're taking a drug that, first of all, is inevitably going to make your heart work harder to service all this extra economy you're adding to your body. I would never want to try something that potentially could cause me this kind of problems.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. I think I've followed wrestling too long to be able to just completely say without some smirk on my face that steroids are completely healthy to take. I just can't buy it.
Yeah, I can't either. That's why I would like to see these studies. He continues, as for steroids and wrestling, well, I'm going to maybe take a controversial stance and say yes, not because I think it's particularly right, but I just feel that the horse is already bolted and you can't really stop steroid use these days. The only promotion with any kind of policy is the E, and let's face it, wellness isn't exactly watertight. If you say it's okay, you can at least make sure there's constant medical monitoring and that everything is being done as safe as possible, while also doing research into any long-term effects and nipping any medical issues that arise due to use in the butt on a case-by-case basis. I realize this wouldn't apply to the indie scene, but I think it's better to try and at least protect some of the users rather than none. It's certainly a complex issue, however. Steroids seem ingrained in wrestling culture and always will be, so why not try and mitigate it and do it as safely as possible instead?
One issue I do have with the wellness policy, and I'll extend this over to the UFC as well, is that I don't feel it should be on them to administer their own drug testing, because outside of a moral obligation, there's zero incentive for them to do this drug testing.
So who should?
Outside agencies. And it doesn't have to be the government, but some third-party agency.
Funded by what?
Let's say they were to test Brock Lesnar, mm-hmm. and 2 weeks before WrestleMania comes out, he's got a positive test.
Mm-hmm.
Is WWE to suspend him? What's my incentive to suspend this guy?
Right.
There's none.
Yeah, there isn't. I guess, the other part is who's going to pay for this? Is the government going to?
Well, the government has washed their hands of professional wrestling, so it's not going to be the government. And I mean, they're so strapped right now. I mean, that's a large reason. Nevada, at one point, they wanted to do a lot of out-of-competition testing, and it's very little they do now because it's just they don't have the budget for it.
Mm.
And that's why, I mean, there's third-party organizations now like VADA that is out there. So I don't know, but I just think it's, and I think, you know, the UFC, we've seen when they go to overseas shows, I mean, they have popped Chris Leben twice. Mm-hmm. They suspended Stefan Bonner, and there's zero incentive for them to do this.
Yeah. Suspend them afterwards, not before a fight.
Well, it's their post fight.
Yeah.
Drug test.
I know
that they test.
So there's still nothing to risk. You know what I mean? Whereas in,
right.
In
they
pro
get the
wrestling,
fight in.
Yeah.
We continue on here with Tanise, who writes, good documentary. The film just shows that in life you have black, white, and there will always be shades of gray. Hearing about the Bell brothers' childhood stories reminded me of the interviews with Jericho, Guerrero, Benoit, and others about how wrestling fans gravitated towards the Hogans, Ultimate Warriors, and other wrestlers about their size. This film also showed me that in America you can make a huge profit off of any and everything. I was tickled by Congressman Waxman not knowing the information, since he was the one who called for the baseball hearings. And what put the cherry on top was about him not knowing where the $15 million went to. I feel so sorry for Mr. Hooten. You can clearly see he needs justification for his child's death and is so closed off to reasoning, it's clear he will never get over the death. What also saddened me about the film is when the father was predicting that Mike would end up dead. So sad. This documentary is worth a look, and I'll suggest this to anyone. Can't wait for Wednesday. Yeah, Henry Waxman was terrible.
Jesus.
This was unbelievable to the point I can't believe he just signed off to that this footage could be used.
Well,
painting him as such a dolt.
Yeah, exactly. For a politician to know that you're on camera asking, I obviously didn't expect all that footage to be used of him asking his, assistant about so many questions that he should know the answer to. But I thought a brilliant, brilliant job by the filmmaker in a guerrilla style type of presentation.
Well, you always roll.
Yeah, exactly. We go to M.N. Paul Singh, who says, Mike Bell's most famous moment in the pro wrestling world was being legitimately destroyed by Hurt Perry Saturn, which we discussed. Mike's demise ended up negating the skeptical view of the health risks of steroids put forth by some segments of the film, and only strengthened the argument that steroid use can be lethal, even though the exact cause of death is not known. An interesting fact, Christian Boving, the hydro... Yeah, as mentioned by John. You know, I mean, the whole Mike Bell situation, I don't think a cause of death has ever been come out, but as we mentioned, like, his case is much more of a psychological case, in my opinion, than something to do with steroids. But certainly...
I don't think steroids were helping.
You can argue that yes.
And finally, we end off with Mark Rattel. I'm a big fan of this film, and I also feel strangely connected to it in many ways. As a former indie worker, I started training in 1999, I knew Mike Bell from indie shows in the Northeast. He was always a nice guy to me early on, and I was caught by surprise when I first watched this film. It's odd to see someone you personally know featured in such an open film. A few years back, when I was getting my master's in documentary production, Chris Bell did a screening at my school. I was able to meet him there and spoke to him a bit about his late brother. Chris was awesome and stayed really late to answer all of our questions. As far as the film goes, it's exactly what I want in a documentary. Humor, facts, investigation, and also true-to-life situations and characters we can invest in. Great film. Well, thank you very much, Mark, someone that actually knew Mike Bell. So that wraps up our feedback for this week. So thanks to everybody who've provided feedback and checking out this week's show. I guess a more serious tone this week, Way,
yeah,
to our show. But I think a very prevalent topic, and one that I don't like to ever, you know, we cover an industry that, I mean, this is not something I like to ignore. This is a... You don't need to put your head in the sand to be to follow these industries here. Where,
yeah.
I mean, there's a very open culture that surrounds this.
And I really feel like the more we talk about it, the more knowledgeable everybody is going to be. And I guess the closer we'll be to finding a solution.
So that's going to wrap us up for this week, everyone. Next week, we're into January, Way, which means, you know what January means?
The Royal Rumble.
Oh, I thought I was going to say Genesis.
But oh,
Royal Rumble.
Yeah, that too.
Let's review a Royal Rumble for next week. And next week on this show, I think we're going to formally announce our Royal Rumble contest details.
Nice.
Ooh.
What's the prize this year?
I don't know. That's okay. Why you should tune in next week.
To be decided.
Yeah, I haven't decided at all.
Always a contest. We're all about our giving back, aren't we?
Love contests.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll give away ginger ale. No, we'll go with something good. Okay.
Coffee, maybe.
You pick a year, Way.
You know what? I'm actually...
We've done a bunch.
I'm trying to pull up our request thread, because a lot of people have been, kind enough to suggest a number of shows, so I feel like we should get to them. If you just give me 1 second here as I meander and just spew bullshit from my mouth.
Well, so in the meantime, I'm going to tell everybody about what's coming up later this week. We've got Review and Impact on Friday with Way, Nate Milton, and myself. And Way, are we going to have a mini Superior Spider-Man review on Friday?
Absolutely.
Will you have read it by then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I will as well. So Friday, we got so much feedback to that comic book discussion last week. Yeah. I was stunned.
Yeah, usually when we talk about off-topic things, we get criticized, at least from, as it relates to the Jersey Shore or even MMA. You guys talk about that stuff too much. Oh, yeah, whereas this
fuck that shit.
Comic books seems like overwhelmingly positive feedback.
Okay, so Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah,
on Friday
we're gonna open the feedback thread on Impact.
Sure, why not?
Superior Spider-Man feedback as well.
Okay, I've got it up here. Wade, do you have?
All right, no, I don't. I got a problem with this.
You pick a year. We can go with any of these.
Let's do the Royal Rumble, 1995.
95. We haven't done that, right?
If it's in that thread, I trust Louis.
Yeah, Louis doesn't mess around.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do the 1995 Royal Rumble from I believe Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
That was during the lean years, the very very lean years.
Should we not do that one then? Oh. We've done a number of. I feel like we've been in that era for a while.
Okay, let's do another one then.
Okay, Royal Rumble 1991.
1991 Royal Rumble is what we're going to do. So there we go. We just blue-balled you if you're excited about the 95
maybe,
Rumble.
Just give us a couple weeks. Maybe we'll do that 95 one.
Yeah, we got a couple weeks till this year's Rumble. So, okay, next week we will do the Royal Rumble 91. It does have the most votes here with 2. So we'll go with that for next week. Once again, Review and Impact this Friday. The MMA report will be up Thursday with Daniel Cormier and a look at the death of Strikeforce. I'm going to document the birth...
the life and the death of the Strike Force organization this week, Way.
All right.
It's going to be quite the look.
Put in a body bag. Wheel it into the cask.
We're going to say our give our last respects to Strike Force before they bite the dust on Saturday night in Oklahoma City. And then this Sunday, The Law returns to 11 p.m. Eastern time. I know a lot of people are excited about this. We are back. We are at 11 p.m. Eastern right through past the Super Bowl. So there will be no move back to midnight over the next month or anything like that. Football is done on Sunday nights, and we will be on at 11 p.m. the night of the Super Bowl. So that's good news. Dave Meltzer will join us. We'll be chatting about TNA Genesis. Lots of stuff coming your way. And do yourself a favor. Go back. Check out some of our shows from the past week. Review a Raw on Monday night. What a Raw that was.
Jesus.
The Rock. TLC match.
Yeah. I can't believe they did that thing in the...
angle?
Yeah, that angle in the 10 o'clock hour. Jesus Christ.
Yes. And Japanese audio wrestling from this past week. And Chris Charlton, WH Park, attended the New Japan Pro Wrestling Wrestle Kingdom 7 card at the Tokyo Dome Live. So they have a full recap of the show with guest Damian Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
A double shot of Damian Abraham from last week.
Yeah, you can never get enough of Damian Abraham.
So check that out. And I would ask Way his thoughts on the Tokyo Dome, but he gave that to us on Monday night. So you still agree with your thoughts from Monday?
Yeah, they haven't really changed.
So. Great show, though.
Yeah.
Very good show. All right, we're going to get on out of here. And let's go out with... Oh, let's go out with a...
Oh, come on. Is there any other song? We got to go out with... Harder, Better, Faster, Stronger by Daft Punk.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, there you go.
Very good idea from Mr. Wei Ting. Always the DJ here on Review Away. So in the meantime, follow the man at Wei0937. Find out what he got for Christmas from Jason Agnew involving Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
And then you can follow me at I Am John Pollock, liveaudiowrestling.com, and subscribe on iTunes. And, hey, leave some feedback as Daft Punk takes us out on this week's edition of Review Away. Make it, do it, it makes us harder, better, faster, stronger, more than power, power, never, ever, after, work is over. Work it, make it, do it, it makes us harder, better, faster, stronger.